comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you may be and wherever you may be, we are delighted that you're here. I'm delighted to be here, and I think you will be as well. Welcome to Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. You know, last night was open line, but for most of the night we talked about this mystery missile out off the coast of Southern California. That apparently was launched Monday night. Monday early afternoon, early evening, about 5:30 in the early evening. And so we talked about that quite extensively last night. Had a lot of different ideas about what it might be and what it might mean and so forth. Well, today, of course, at that time, the Pentagon was saying, well, we don't know. We didn't fire it. And the FAA was saying we didn't give any permits for a private launch, and, you know, we didn't have any missiles or anything showing up in that area on radar. NORAD said we didn't detect it. Well, today there is an explanation being reported. There is, let's see, what is his name? John Pike, who is a defense analyst, has come out with, he said, look, you know, this thing is so obviously the contrail of a jetliner. Why, he said, I'm surprised. Why isn't anybody just standing up and saying so? Well, you know, we have come to expect spin. We have come to expect really nonsensical stories to cover things, you know, when we get an official government explanation of any kind of aerial phenomena, we've just come to expect that it's probably not going to be straight. And I'm pretty quick, really, to expose that when I come across it. But I have to tell you, in this case, I don't think it's spin. I listened to the explanation, I read the explanation, I watched the video, and I think that's a straight story. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I do, one of the things that Mr. Pike pointed out was that he said, look, this thing is moving way too slow to be any kind of a rocket. And then in quotes in the article, it said, you know, there is a reason they call them rockets. And that's true, and it is obviously moving too slow to be a rocket. At least it appears to me to be too slow to be a rocket. And then the explanation for why the trail behind it appears to be, you know, launching from the ocean and headed skyward. And the explanation was, and this makes sense, because, and it does, because I used to fly. When you're airborne, it distorts the direction of things sometimes. So something can look like it's coming from the ocean or coming from the ground when it's really coming from the horizon. So I know that to be true. So I think in this case, at least for now, I'm going to say that the explanation seems to fit the evidence. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are very privileged this evening to have Bryce Zabel as our guest. You know, we talk about things here on this show that are in the realm of the strange and the unexplained. I like a line that I read about a particular magazine, Fate Magazine, where someone wrote that the success of Fate Magazine over the decades has been that Fate Magazine has been willing to accept the idea that things we think are impossible do sometimes happen. And when they do, they don't happen in a vacuum. You know, they happen to real people, and they have real consequences, real results. And Bryce Zabel is the co-author of a book called AD, After Disclosure. His co-author in this work is someone who's been a guest on our show several times, Richard Dolan. And Richard Dolan, of course, is quite noted as a UFO historian. And Bryce Zabel is well known as well. He's the creator of five produced one-hour drama series for television. He's the chairman and CEO of the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. The winner of the Writers Guild Award. He's been a PBS investigative reporter, a CNN correspondent. And as I said, co-author in this book, After Disclosure. And so we're just really, really privileged to have him with us this evening. Bryce, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Kevin, I'm really thrilled to be on with you, and I definitely appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and all your great listeners.
Well, I'll tell you, you've got folks in 143 countries on the edge of their seats right now, because I know a lot of them are familiar with some of the series that you've worked on, like Dark Skies. You didn't just work on, you're responsible for Dark Skies, Pandemic, Poseidon Adventure, the miniseries, Blackbeard. Blackbeard was done in Thailand, right?
That version of it, although there were two versions that came out almost back-to-back the same year.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it was interesting shooting Blackbeard, which of course is a North American story in Thailand. But that's the nature of Hollywood these days.
Well, it got my interest because that's where my home is. That's where my house, my wife, my little boy, my dog, my car, and a motorcycle are. So when I saw that was done in Thailand, I had an instant affinity for it.
Well. Then I cast no aspersions on Thailand. I'm damn happy they made it there.
All right. Now, I want us to talk about After Disclosure. But
sure.
You've never been with us before. With all of this great resume that you've got, tremendous career, a lot of it in serious news reporting, and a lot of it as well as a screenwriter for some science fiction things. But how did you come to a point where you wanted to take this very serious leap in this book dealing with UFOs and what happens after disclosure? What brought you to that point?
We all have taken our own journeys to get to where we are on this particular issue, and I don't know that I'm all that different from most of your listeners. The first thing that happens for most people is you start to open your mind to the possibility that maybe things aren't exactly as the party line would have it be told. And for me, that happened, I guess, going back to when I was a kid. And I remember my mother getting The Uninterrupted Journey from as one of the book club's selections. But I didn't really seriously take this topic on until I decided to write about it in the late 80s. And I wrote the first sci-fi channel film called Official Denial, which was about alien abductions and trying to explain what they were all about. But in order to do it, I started opening myself up to doing more research. And the more I read of the good material, the more I realized, you know, this isn't just a story. This is the real deal. And once you take that leap, then you just need to know more. You want to know more and more. And I specifically came to the road where we are today, where I'm the co-author with Richard Dolan of this book, 80 After Disclosure, because I had, like so many of your listeners, read his first two volumes of his UFOs and the National Security State, which are really masterpieces. And I had called Rich up. I didn't know him. I just called him up to see if they were available to be optioned, and he said they were. So I said, I'd like to option them for film or television. And it was only after that that we got to know each other a little bit better. I think I made that call about a year ago. And then sometime in February or March of 2010, we started talking about disclosure and how there's been 10,000 books that have been written basically trying to prove that UFOs were real. But there hasn't been one book dedicated solely to looking at what the world will be like and how it will change after that reality is acknowledged. And I think it's really a great source of luck or inspiration that Rich Dolan was able to put aside his third volume and write AD with me, and I'm thrilled that he did.
So AD, then, is sort of a sociological journey into the future, isn't it?
It is. I call it speculative nonfiction. In other words, you could write a book that was about, say, what would happen if an asteroid hit the Earth, and nobody would call it science fiction if you wrote about it in terms of what would happen to the Earth and how it would affect the ecosystem, etc. So it would still be a nonfiction book, and that's how I look at this book. It's a nonfiction book. One of the highest compliments that was paid to it recently in one of the reviews is someone thought that it read like a briefing document that had come from a think tank. And I think that that's actually what Rich Dolan and I set out to do, which was to try to imagine if the rock in the pool is a disclosure announcement, the acknowledgement that UFO and ET reality exists, what are the ripples that come out of that rock going in that pool? And we found that they would change everything from the economy to the culture to the military to science, religion, politics, government. We just think it will change everything. Not some things for the worse, some for the better. Some will change for a while and bounce back. But in general, it will be what we said would happen after 9/11. We said after that everything would change. It didn't really, but we think it will after disclosure.
Well, now, this is a topic, Bryce, that we have talked about here on this show really pretty extensively over the years. The show's been on for 10 years, so over time, we've talked about this a lot.
I'm sure you formed your own very strong opinions about it as well.
Well, I don't know that I have, except that I do think that for sure things will change. Now, I don't think it's going to be as cataclysmic as some folks in the government seem to think it will be. Of course, look, government is status quo. Government is establishment. So change, any change that they don't institute and initiate, is kind of cataclysmic for them. On this issue, then that means they're behind the curve instead of ahead of the curve.
You bet. I mean, look, the whole issue for years has been clouded by the, Donald Kehoe called them the silence group. You can call them the secret keepers. Some people think they're Majestic 12. We call them the breakaway group. Whoever they are, the people that have been managing the secret for lo these many years have stuck pretty tenaciously to the idea that if the truth actually were to get out, that it would cause public panic. I'm not saying that it won't cause some degree of public panic, but it is still one of those things that is a risk we have to accept. And whether it's cataclysmic or not depends on how it's done, but even more than that, it depends on what actually is disclosed. And given that the secret keepers actually have the information, and you and I are trying to figure it out from around the edges, they would know how cataclysmic it could or could not be.
Yeah, but I think the secret keepers and people who are defenders of the status quo, they really sell the rest of us short most of the time. Would there be some panic? Oh, yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, there are people. My mother, bless her heart, you can say boo and my mother will run. You know, there are people that you can just startle with anything. And they're scared of everything, but that's not the majority.
No, and Kevin, I actually, you know, want to qualify this. I don't want to sound like I'm the prophet of cataclysm and doom. What Rich and I were actually the point that we were making in the book is, it isn't so much about the others, as we call them in many respects. It's about our reaction to this news. So let's just take a very human reaction. When major news is breaking, quite often people start to hoard goods. So, for example, you could have disclosure, and if even 30% of the people decide to make a trip to Costco to buy up everything they can get, from batteries to flashlights to God knows what, because of this news and the uncertainty it interjects, you're going to have Costco's getting locked up because there's nothing in them anymore, and you're going to have goods and services in turmoil for a period of time, not because of the information that would be disclosed, but because of our response to it. And as a consequence, you might have panic, but not panic about who the others are and what they're here for and what they want, as much as you might have panic over your sense about how you're going to protect your family in uncertain times.
Well, you know, we were talking about this on the air a few nights ago, Bryce, and in agreement with what you're saying, I used this example. One of the countries that I served in was pretty interesting because every house, I mean 100% of the houses in this country, have a big wall around them made of concrete or bricks, and on the top of that wall there are sharp pieces of metal and shards of glass embedded with cement. And I asked the landlord where I was living, I asked him, why is that? And he said, because we know each other. And so,
lightning comment.
Yeah, and it truly was the most thoroughly criminal country I've ever been in.
Well,
and I think our fear of each other,
us. Kevin, as someone who I was just reviewing how many different countries and places you visited or lived in, as someone who has that global sense about him, you know, I think you must understand history. A lot of the future that we predict in AD after disclosure is based on looking at things and how they've been handled in the past. And there's literally no doubt that the uncertainty that can be entered into the equation in times of trouble or just questioning of authority and the establishment and so forth can lead to trouble. And we think that probably for the first year after disclosure, there's going to be that kind of uncertainty and trouble, and then we'll see as things kick in. But I just wanted to just add one thought here, because you mentioned the TV series that I did in the 90s, Dark Skies, which, by the way, is coming out on DVD, and maybe we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But the one thing that we tried to do about Dark Skies is put the disclosure argument into the voices of the two main characters. The young character, John Lowengard, took the classic position, which is the people have a right to know. Whatever the truth is, we can handle it, and we have a right to know what it is. The older character, the naval intelligence officer who was running Majestic 12 in that television series, played by J.T. Walsh, a character named Frank Bach, he took more of the a few good men approach, which was you can't handle the truth, and because the truth will be too destabilizing, it's better for us to protect it. You can make an argument for both sides of that equation. It certainly powered the television series that we did on Dark Skies, talking about disclosure. But it's also something that, if you think about how this secret has been managed for at least six, going on seven decades, and maybe more, that there have to be people who were on the inside who have from time to time vetted these very ideas and used them against each other to try to fight their way through what to do about this very thorny issue. And I think what AD After Disclosure is trying to do is to say eventually, through whatever circumstances that will lead to it, eventually the other side is going to win, and there will be disclosure. And at that point, it won't matter whether we can handle the truth or not, because we're going to have to.
Well, that's exactly right. Anything that is true, you can obfuscate, you can obscure, but you cannot make it go away. If it is true, it eventually surfaces. And there's no way to keep it down if it is true.
Well, as they've said before, facts are stubborn things.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, I think you've made a very excellent point here, and that is it won't matter whether we can handle the truth or can't handle the truth. We'll have to handle it because it's going to happen.
Which, by the way, is one of the main reasons Rich and I both put aside things that we were doing. He had the third part of his trilogy, and I had some other issues that I was working on, some other projects. And we both put them aside for the very reason, and by the way, because we felt like it's important for us to start this discussion now, because in our view, this disclosure moment, even though we're not going to get a crystal ball out and predict the exact date, at some point it's going to happen. And the more that we've discussed it, and the more people who are aware that it's coming, the more successful the transition will be to whatever the post-disclosure society is going to be. And so we feel like it's time to get on with this debate. It's time to start making mental images in our own minds worldwide about how we think our societies and cultures are going to grapple with this so that we can do a better job of it.
Well, I'm pretty critical of organized religion usually. One of the reasons is they defend so staunchly the status quo. But on this issue, the Roman Catholic Church seems to be trying to get ahead of the curve this
time.
They
sure do, and we take extensive note of that. You have to ask yourself, the Catholic Church, if nothing else, is an establishment institution and fairly conservative as a consequence, and you have to wonder why they would be allowing people who speak for them to get so out front on this issue if they didn't suspect that it was going to become an item of public discussion sooner than later. So it does seem to us that you can take a cue or two from that and begin to intuit that they don't want their religion to come crashing around them. They want to be able to argue that God's universe is a big universe and there are many children in it and we are among them. But
hate to do it, Bryce, but we have to step away for break here for a couple of minutes. We'll be back, folks, right after this with Bryce Zabel. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Bryce Zabel, and we are talking about, we're talking about UFOs and ETs, but specifically about what happens after disclosure. He is the co-author of AD After Disclosure. The other author, Richard Dolan. Bryce, we were talking about the fact that the Roman Catholic Church usually, I mean, their history is one of, don't confuse us with the facts. You know, our mind is made up. We're not going to look through your telescope, but we are going to arrest you for telling us we're wrong. I mean, that's their history. But on this, they have jumped right out front.
They certainly seem to, and they have a number of, as you point out, those telescopes and observatories, and they certainly seem Let me put it this way. You have to believe that the Catholic Church has some control over its message and who they're going to allow to say what. And if that's the case, they've let an awful lot of people say that they believe we're not alone in the universe and that we're going to discover that sooner than later.
And it would indicate to me that at the upper levels, the top levels of the Vatican, someone has some information about something coming up.
It would seem that either they have, you know, whether they have information about something coming up or not, I don't know that I have enough information to speculate on that, but I would say their actions indicate that they believe that the knowledge that we have company is inevitably going to be disclosed. Whether they have a timetable, whether they have any foreknowledge, I don't know, but they certainly seem to be thinking along the lines that this is all going to come out and we might as well be on the right side of it, which goes to a lot of what we think will happen in forcing disclosure and then dealing with it afterwards. Modern public relations is basically, when you're talking about crisis control, is to try to get out in front of the story rather than be caught behind it. So at a certain point, a dynamic toward disclosure will probably take place. And when that happens, people like the Catholic Church or governments or other institutions would rather be in front of the story than behind it.
I would say generally that's true. However, I see absolutely no evidence that the government of the United States has any intention or thought or even has whispered about getting in front of this.
I don't either, by the way. I think the feeling that Rich and I have is it isn't so much people like to believe that we're being acclimated and there's some grand plan and the government's going to disclose and people are constantly throwing dates around that turn out not to be true. I'm with you on this one. I don't see any evidence that the breakaway group, as we call them, has any plan to disclose. It's more that Rich and I believe that at a certain point, some events are going to take place, and probably in concert with other events, that is going to begin to create a situation where the public feels it already knows what the truth is, or that it's pretty clear that there is something to disclose. And at the point that dynamic begins to shift, it isn't that the government, whether it's our government or anybody's government, will be planning to disclose. It's more that they will have to say to themselves, we're looking foolish because everybody else seems to be talking about this right now. Mm-hmm. We better try to get in front of it and manage it.
Well, it's just my opinion, but I think we've passed that point. They look foolish, and on this issue, I think they are in a position of complete irrelevance.
Well, they do look foolish to people who do a lot of reading, and like yourself and your listeners and Rich and myself, we've all done the reading, we've talked to people, we've studied, we've tried to sort out the wheat from the chaff in this issue, and to most people that have done that kind of work, you come to the conclusion that, yep, this is real, and it seems foolish that the media or your friends or the neighbor down the block don't seem to understand this. But I do think there are vast pockets of power and people who just don't get it yet. And at some point, though, events will gather some steam in one way or another where more and more of those undecideds are going to get knocked off the wall. And as that happens, that's when the people who have been so zealously guarding this secret for decades are going to have to have some more secret meetings where they ask themselves, is the center going to hold here, or should we try a different plan right now? That's probably how it's going to go down when it goes down.
Well, you know, I'm willing to concede. I see what you're saying, and I'm willing to concede that there are some pockets of intelligent people that just don't get it yet. But I'll tell you something. There is a vast field of mushrooms out there, and if a UFO landed on them, they wouldn't get it.
Well, and but let's lay some responsibility for that. It seems clear to me that in the late 40s, early 50s, the twin towers of UFO cover-up were discovered, which were official denial and public ridicule, mm-hmm. deny and ridicule, and it's probably likely that at the first moments when those policies were being implemented, the people who were implementing them, who were primarily in the military at that point, probably thought they were buying time, that they would use these policies to buy them time to try to get a handle on what was going on so that they could manage it more effectively and do the right thing. I bet if you were to get an honest answer out of people who were in on the cover-up at the very beginning, most of whom are dead now, of course, but they would probably express some surprise at how effective deny and ridicule turned out to be over the years. I mean, you take a look at the media, the establishment media bought deny and ridicule hook, line, and sinker, and they still buy it today.
Mm-hmm.
Their role in the cover-up is less to do with being manipulated by CIA or other outside influences, and more to do with journalists who simply do not want to risk appearing foolish at all, ever. And so they basically buy the denial, and they continue the ridicule.
You're exactly right. And, you know, one of the things, I think that's one of the major institutions that's going to be decimated by disclosure. And here's why. If a pterodactyl, which we all think are extinct, if a pterodactyl were to land, living pterodactyl lands in Central, what is it called, Central Park?
Yes.
In New York City. They get it on video. There's security cameras everywhere. They get it on video. Here's this pterodactyl, and it starts attacking some people. You would not find a single major media outlet or any reporter who could get to Central Park. You would not find any of them that would not report that, because that would be big news.
Right.
But there's more evidence, solid evidence, of the reality of UFOs than there is of any living pterodactyl, and they won't report it straight.
You're completely right, but remember, journalism is like high school, and the journalists who are in the media high school all want to be the cool kids. And they really, really want to make sure they don't do anything that could cause anybody else to laugh at them. So that's been one of the things. But I just wanted to, you know, you said the media will be exposed, and Rich and I spend a lot of the book talking about the media, and we totally concur that the media will be basically exposed for its just complete lack of competence on this issue. And yet, and here's what is interesting, because as you start to war game disclosure and say, how is this all going to play out? The first thing you're going to think about the media is, boy, they sure missed that one, didn't they? And you're going to be disgusted that this institution, which was basically supposed to be looking out for your best interest and watching your back and revealing uncomfortable truths and doing all the things that the Woodwards and Bernsteins and the journalists schools wanted to have happen, and they didn't do it. And you're going to say, well, that would destroy any institution to have the public see them as so lacking. Here's the interesting problem, though. There's nothing to replace them. So what's going to happen after disclosure? They'll be seen for as being as foolish as they are, but they're immediately going to pivot to covering the story and even covering their own complicity in not being able to cover the story originally. And since there's no one else to cover it, and we will all desperately want to know what's going on, we'll still be glued to our television sets and our sources of information on the internet and newspapers and magazines and so forth, and they're actually going to get away with it. They're going to cover their own mistakes, and they're going to pivot to covering the story.
Well, I think they will get away with it to some degree, and certainly mass media is marketed to the mushrooms. I mean, it is. And I'll tell you something. Mass media. So you used to do stuff for CNN. The CNN today is not the CNN you worked for.
Well, if it ever was, and you know, I just remember when Edgar Mitchell first started making his comments. The CNN report I saw was an anchor woman smiling broadly as she introduced the story. They used X-Files music. They talked about they showed cartoon images of little green men, and instead of calling them extraterrestrial biological entities, they call them little green men. Instead of UFOs, they're flying saucers. Anything to diminish it. And this anchor woman and Wolf Blitzer just smiled at you know how silly this was. And I thought to myself, for crying out loud, the sixth man to walk on the moon, a man who flew Apollo 14, which proves he's brave because he flew the mission after the disastrous Apollo 13 mission. This guy says that he believes that there is proof for Roswell and proof for extraterrestrials. He should have been on the front cover of Time and Newsweek, but instead, he doesn't even get covered. And when he does get covered, and we say, well, hey, at least they're covering the issue, he gets covered with ridicule. And I just think that was ridiculous. And another great example that just had me slapping my head was the September 27th conference at the National Press Club, where the six Air Force officers stood up and talked about how UFOs had interfered with nuclear missiles. Now, if that is not a national security issue, I don't know what is. But the Washington Post, the newspaper of Woodward and Bernstein, sent a lifestyle reporter named John Kelly. And John Kelly went to that news conference and began and ended his coverage with a discussion of the types of cookies that were served at the press club.
Yeah.
So you got to ask yourself, what are these people thinking? What the Washington Post should have done is said, this sounds interesting. Maybe these people are crazy. Maybe they're not. But we're sending our top national security person to this news conference to look into it. But no, they send a cookie analyst.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right, and but look, you know, you touched on a couple of things that are my pet peeves with the mushroom media, the flying saucers and the little green men. Both of those were invented by the media.
Yes.
And then they throw it back as though that's something to ridicule us with. That's their own dumbass statement.
I have less of a problem with flying saucer as a term. Stanton Friedman, for example, would rather call them flying saucers. He likes that term. It's the little green men diminishment of the topic, and it's just so wrong-headed that anyone who's a newscaster or a journalist of any kind falling prey to that kind of discussion, it just makes you angry because you realize they're not doing their job. I mean, if a plumber came to your house and put the same level of attention on fixing your toilet that these journalists do to covering UFOs, you'd fire the guy and send him packing.
You are exactly right. We have to step away for break for just a moment. Folks, we'll be back more with Bryce Zabel right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Bryce Zabel. And we were talking about the news media and the strange little things that devices that they use to create ridicule. Now, let me ask you a question, Bryce, and then I want to move away from the news media.
Okay.
Whenever we I look at the ratings. And when you look at all, you look at newspapers, radio, terrestrial radio, internet radio, and television, the ratings, this is done by the Edison Research Group working with Arbitron, and they do this media research every year. And the last one I looked at, newspapers, they asked this question of the American people. What is the most essential media to you? Newspapers came in at 11%.
Right.
Terrestrial radio came in at 27%. Internet radio and, well, internet came in at like, I could be wrong about this, I think it was about 32-33%. And then television topped it out, barely, 36%, something like
sure.
that. Okay. But television, the interesting thing was, it topped out because of the age group 45 and above. Okay, so you have, in that age group, you have diminishing numbers as you get older. You have diminishing numbers of people who are using internet. But that group next year is 46, and the group that was 44 is now 45. And they brought internet with them as number one. You're only 2 years away with their numbers. You're only 2 years away from internet being number one, television being number two, radio very far back at number three, and newspapers almost off the end of the cliff. Now, when they look at these numbers, and then they look at the polls that show that somewhere around 80% of Americans, about 50% believe that UFOs are real. About 80% think that the government is covering something up and not telling us the truth about UFOs. Now, when they look at these numbers, their marketing departments, and television news is all about marketing now. Their marketing department must have real morons in there that are telling them it's okay to keep spitting in the eyes of 80% of the audience they're trying to get.
You would think. Is the question, why is this the case? Why are they not covering UFOs with more precision?
Well, I quit asking that question. I just accept the fact that that's what they do, but I just make the observation that their marketing departments must be populated with morons.
Well, yes, but let's drill just a little bit deeper on that. Because like I said, I spent my time on the other side, and certainly know how they think to a certain degree, because I've thought that way myself. There's one trend that works against UFO deep coverage, which is it is less expensive and easier to do views instead of news. That's why on cable, particularly, but really everywhere, you're getting more and more shows that are not about covering the news as they are about expressing views, because it's just easier. You mm-hmm. just kind of wind people up, put them on the air, and they talk, and you fill time, and you sell commercials. The other thing is that, particularly with the UFO topic, but on all news in general, it is hard to investigate. Investigation takes time, it takes money, and it takes guts, and it takes nerves of steel. And you particularly, when you go out on that limb, you want to make sure it's not getting sawed off. And the UFO issue is a scary one to most establishment media, not just because of the high school analogy I made earlier where they don't want to be laughed at and they do want to be one of the cool kids. It's scary because they haven't been covering it, so they don't have a basis to cover it from, and they're afraid they could get duped or caught or just do the wrong thing. And honestly, they could, because as everyone listening knows, you cannot believe everything you hear about UFOs on the internet or anywhere, because there's been much disinformation put out over the years. We are also a very diverse group of people that includes pranksters. It includes people that are willfully misinforming their fellows. It includes people who want to believe things, and because they want to believe them, they're true. So to truly dig through all of that and to try to get at the truth of the UFO situation is a really daunting task. It's daunting, frankly, for you, Kevin, and me, and anybody. But it's really daunting to a reporter who basically has not given it much thought and doesn't won't be allowed the time by his bosses to do it justice. So it's easier for them to make fun because it doesn't require any work.
Well, I understand the explanation, and I see that it is, what you're describing is at work. It is how it happens. And I just have to say their demise is in their own hands.
That's correct. And wouldn't it be great, wouldn't it be just fabulous if just one of these establishment media voices said, we're going to double down on this issue. We're going all in, and we are going to put our formidable resources, our money, our prestige, and our reputation onto this topic and try to get to the bottom of it. But so far, nobody's done it. And I'm not optimistic that they'll do it unless they're given a big push.
Well, let's move away from the media. I truly view the media in this country as a lost cause. When I want to know what's going on in this country, I get my news from overseas.
Well, we could talk about, we could definitely trash the media for another couple of hours.
So, oh, yeah, they've earned it.
We're wise to move on.
What do you and Rich Dolan see as being the most impacted institution or part of our culture, the most impacted by disclosure?
Well, not to cycle back too strongly, but media is definitely one of them. But beyond media, you'd have to say government, for the simple reason that they will be exposed for having, if not overtly lied, at least played along with a lie for a good long time. And trusting government's already at record lows, this won't help it. There are prescriptions for this, though. If the government is going to participate in a disclosure and they want to be in front of it, then what they need to do is they need to, again, pivot like the media will and start trying to get to the bottom of how they managed to not know what was going on, because not everybody in the government knows what's going on by any means. So government's going to be terrifically impacted. All politics is going to change. The long-term impacts belong in areas like that. Short-term and possibly long-term, you have the economy. We know the economy will be greatly impacted because obviously, they're going to have to shut the stock market down for a while, and they may even have a bank holiday or two. Eventually, things are going to come back, and then we're going to have to deal with the more long-term issues. Like, for example, if physical objects are able to hover and fly as fast as they've been reported with the performance abilities that has been reported, they're not doing so with internal combustion engines and gasoline, mm-hmm. which means there's another form of energy out there, and whether these others help us figure out what it is or whether we just simply realize for a fact that they've got it and we want it, life is going to change. And the oil-based economy, which accounts for a lot of how the world works right now, is also going to change. That's a scary thing. That'll be very disruptive.
Yeah, I think it will be. But, you know, we're living with our toes hanging over the edge of the cliff now with the economy. And, you know, it's only going to take someone walking up behind our economy and saying poof, and it'll blow it right over the cliff. So, you know, this may be exactly the right time for the government to get out in front of this and start doing disclosure. Because, you know, it's inevitably going to happen. And the question is, are you going to be in control of it, or are you going to be the victim of it?
Well, that's exactly right. Now, obviously, people are scared of change, and governments are scared of change, and that would explain why they've taken so long and why they're afraid to do it right now. Clearly, there's a rational reason to get it over with, but I think fear still wins the day. While you still think you can keep this genie in the bottle, and you have an economy, as you put it, where just a soft poof from behind is going to knock it over, doing disclosure is not necessarily what any president wants to be his major act.
All right, we're going to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Bryce Zabel. And we're talking about this new book that he and Rich Dolan have written. It is called AD, After Disclosure. Bryce, is the book already out and available?
Yeah, it is. Our first printing came out in the very last week of October. People that are interested to decide if they want to buy it or not, the entire introduction is published for them to read on our website, which is afterdisclosure.com. And so I'd urge people to take a look at it that way. And again, afterdisclosure.com, pretty simple to get to.
Okay. Now, it's also going to be available as an ebook. It's going to be available in Kindle format, and what other formats?
Well, it's in fact, the ebook right now is we're having a couple of technical issues that we're overcoming today and tomorrow. Should be out for the weekend in Kindle, Nook, iBook. And something that's very exciting is that a company called Zentro Media is going into the iBook, enhanced iBook business. They're going to take one of their very first projects that they're going to do to show how cool they can make an enhanced iBook, is they're going to take AD After Disclosure, and they're going to enhance the book with video, audio, pictures, songs, music, everything. They're going to throw everything into it. Now, that'll be out sometime in January. But for right now, the book is the book. Their hardcover is out. And it's available either through keyholepublishing.com or through amazon.com. And we're getting some very nice reviews, and we're very grateful for that.
Okay. Now, you and I will continue talking, but I want to invite our audience to join us as well. And we do that by asking you folks if you have a question or a comment for Bryce. You can give us a call at 623-444-5889. I'll give you the number again in just a second. This number will work from anywhere on planet Earth and possibly from planet X. 623-444-5889.
Kevin, toll free. Are you broadcasting from Phoenix?
No.
No.
No. My actual location is a mystery. It's so secret, nope. Even we can't find it.
I'm sorry, it's undisclosed, and we need say nothing more.
The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. 888-223-4599. Now, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have an international toll-free number, could not find one available that would work for the whole world. So what I've done is I've put something on my website called a flash message link. So you just go to my website, scroll down, you see the picture about tonight's show, and you see Bryce's picture there. And to the right of that, you'll see a link that says flash message. If you click that, you can send me your comments or questions that way, if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, okay? If you're in the USA, you're in Canada, use the telephones. I'll even pay for the call if you need me to do so, okay? Bryce, how do you think this disclosure, after disclosure, how do you think it's going to change daily realities for Ma and Pa America?
Well, I'd break that down into the short term and the long term. On the short term, I think both Rich and I, and most people that have thought about it, think that there will be some disruption. You can't throw this kind of news out there in an official way and not have people react to it. But it's like we talked about earlier in your program. A lot of the reaction is simply what we do as a consequence of the news and not by virtue of the news itself. Long term is going to be more based on what the disclosure actually is. What are the answers to the two questions? Who are they and what do they want? Is there more than one kind of entity out there? How long have they been here? Have they interfered in human history? All the questions that people have, to the extent that the media comes alive and starts covering those, those will change the long-term analysis of things and how they're how it's all going to go down. In the short term, we tend to think that the first year will have the usual disruptions that you might expect, and it's sort of like if you remember the great film Dr. Strangelove, I believe it's General Buck Turgeson is his name, and he's describing what a nuclear war would be like, and he says, "I ain't saying we're not going to get our hair mussed." And I guess that's what we think. It's mm-hmm. like, it has to happen. We can handle the truth, but it's not going to be perfect. Of course, there's going to be things that we have to deal with, but our opinion is, and I think most people's opinion that know about this reality, their opinion is, well, we have to get on with it, so let's get started now. It's just going to have some bumpiness to it.
You mentioned it would depend some on the content of the disclosure, you know, what's disclosed. So let's talk about one particular point. What if what is disclosed includes this information, that we are in fact a hybrid species, and that we in fact are of extraterrestrial origin as a result of being a hybrid manipulated species? How's that going to impact things?
That's a big one. In other words, if the disclosure were as simple as, by the way, there's a few alien scientists that have come here from Zeta Reticuli, and once in a while they pick up a few people to look at them like we pick up a deer. If that was the full extent of disclosure, most people would kind of go, okay, well, what's for breakfast?
Yeah.
But if it's something on the order of what you've just said, where it goes to the nature of what is humanity and where do we exist in the universe and what does all this mean, if it raises all those existential questions, then that's a whole different form of disclosure, and that'll be one that will change not just our daily lives, which will change, but it will also change how everything in education. It would change how we tell our history. It would change how we look at our literature. It would change how we study economics. Everything totally would be impacted by something that incredible. So you raise a good point. There's disclosure, and then there's disclosure.
Another big area will be, regardless of the content of the disclosure, to some degree, this is going to lift the skirts of historians and archaeologists, and we're going to see that they've been lying to us about Earth's history.
Well, they don't come out very well. Most institutions don't come out all that great in this post-disclosure environment, but the people you were just referring to, there's only two explanations. Either they were lying or they were incompetent. And neither one is particularly a positive review.
Well, you know, one of my criticisms of what passes for science, what passes for history these days, is in very large part religious belief. It's a different kind of religion, a different kind of dogma than Christianity or Judaism or Islam, but it still is very religious. And people teach things and say things to the public, people with PhDs on their names, teach things and say things to the public with authoritativeness, when in fact it's nothing but a belief.
So true. What we devoted in an entire chapter, chapter 8, to science and religion, called the paradigm shift. And it is true. You were talking earlier, asking about, well, what institutions are going to suffer. And again, I believe all of them will suffer some loss of faith. And then it'll be up to them to handle this new reality in a way that causes them to regain faith. I mean, I do believe in the value of redemption. It is possible to be redeemed. But scientists, for example, think of the sheer number of scientists who are willing to look you straight in the eye and say, the universe must be teeming with life because it's so large, but they can't possibly be here.
Yeah.
And those people are going to be revealed as just either, again, clueless or incompetent or lying. Carl Sagan is probably the worst offender that I could come up with as a public figure for that. He made an entire career saying the universe was teeming with life, and yet he was quite the debunker of UFOs, saying they couldn't possibly be here. I got in an argument with Dr. Sagan in a parking lot back when I was in my news days, because I said to him, well, if you think that they're 1,000 years ahead of us or 1,000,000 years ahead of us, and you think the universe is teeming with life, if they're so far ahead of us, how can you possibly argue that they can't possibly be here? He didn't like to hear that, of course.
And what was his answer?
His answer was literally to say, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. You've heard him say that.
Yes, and caller, if you will, just hang on for a moment.
Let me. UFO reality. Therefore, it didn't happen.
Well, look, my background is as a cop. Caller, just hang on just a moment.
Sure.
My background is as a cop, and I'm here to tell you that extraordinary claims do not require extraordinary evidence. There's no such thing as extraordinary evidence. And here's the example that I've used on the air. It would be an extraordinary claim if someone were to say the president of the United States is guilty of a murder. Any president. I'm not aiming this at Barack Obama. Any president. Now, that would be an extraordinary claim. But the evidence that it takes to prove it is exactly the evidence it would take to prove you did it.
That's correct.
And there's no such thing as extraordinary evidence.
Variety evidence.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan, Quebec City.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello. Bryce, I really enjoy the information you're presenting, and I have two questions for you.
Sure.
Military and intelligence bodies, how much embedment is there within today's entertainment and media industry?
You know, I just had a hard time gathering that question. I got a little interference. Can you say it one more time, please?
Sure. I was just wondering how much involvement the military or any intelligence bodies have within the production of today's entertainment programs regarding ET.
Well, you know, many people over the years have tried to imply that the entertainment industry has been impacted because it was being used to help acclimate people. I have some experience. I wrote the first Sci-Fi Channel film for the Sci-Fi Channel, about UFOs, and worked on Dark Skies. I even worked on Taken with Spielberg. And to be honest with you, I've never seen any evidence of anybody being manipulated in any way. I think there is some evidence that in the 50s there was probably a certain amount of testing back and forth between military intelligence and Hollywood, but here's how I would put it: if on the checklist of preparation for disclosure was getting the people prepared to accept the fact that there might be true alien life out there, that box got checked off by the end of the 50s. And look at all the alien films that we have on right now. None of them, in my view, have been impacted by anybody trying to get anyone to do anything about extraterrestrial life. And in fact, people often say that Steven Spielberg must have been given inside information. I think if you look at Steven Spielberg's body of work, it's probably unlikely that you could make that argument. If he had a certain message he was being given from inside knowledge, he'd have had a more consistent body of work. He's got an alien invasion piece out now, Fallen Skies, War of the Worlds was marauding, robotic and Transformers, for example, and yet he had the cuddly space scientist of E.T. and the Space Brothers of Close Encounters. He's all over the map. So I don't know if that was exactly your question. I did have a little hard time hearing it, but
oh no, you answered it perfectly. I was wondering if I could squeeze in another quick one, but while
sure.
I have time. The media reaction to the October 14th, 2008 Blossom Goodchild prediction and this year's October 13th, 2010 UFO prediction, what do you think the media or the entertainment industry reaction was to that?
Kevin, is it a question about Blue Beam, basically?
No, Blossom Goodchild last year in Australia had a prediction that on a certain date there was going to be this massive UFO over a city here in the United States.
Right.
And then Stan Fulham, who is a former NORAD flight controller, came out with a book called Challenges of Change that predicted, or he predicted, on October the 13th there would be UFO sightings all over the world as a matter of the UFOs just revealing themselves. And as I understand your question, Stefan, you just want to know what he thinks about those two predictions in terms of how the media handled them?
Stefan,
yeah,
I would
I'm wondering if they took any preparation for that.
Well, one thing that I think I would just state as a matter of fact about any question in that area is I'm very, very skeptical when I hear people toss around specific dates. That we don't try to do that in our book. We're talking about trend lines that lead toward disclosure as opposed to making specific date predictions. I'm always very skeptical there. The whole blue beam thing from October 13th, Rich Dolan has written extensively about on our website, afterdisclosure.com, where he gets into that issue. I'm going to take a pass on trying to be too specific on that particular issue in that I feel like it's kind of not where I focused my head. I've been focusing trying to think about what disclosure is going to mean for the future and less about whether what somebody said is going to come to pass or not. I just think the full trend line, if you will, is aiming toward disclosure. Specifics I'm not so sure of.
Stefan, thank you so much for the call. Good questions. Now, in your answer about Spielberg, for instance, you used him
yes.
as an example. Let me play the devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Yes, from Spielberg we get E.T., and we also get marauding aliens that are trying to conquer the Earth. And as you said, he's been all over the map. But what if the case is, because, you know, there's not just one civilization out there. Maybe there are many, many civilizations.
Yeah, listen,
could all be true.
Kevin, I think you're right. And the truth is, before I get into Spielberg, one thing that seems very clear is, people have used as a joke line for years the idea that, well, why would any aliens want to come to Earth? There's no intelligent life here, that kind of thing, sort of diminishing why anybody would be interested in us.
Yeah.
Rich and I take a completely opposite position. We're not sure exactly why, but we do think the evidence seems to state that we are extremely interesting. There's something about humanity that's interesting. We may just be the greatest show on Earth, literally, in this corner of the galaxy, or there may be other reasons. We're very interesting. So you're right. Based on Spielberg's body of work, if there were multiple types of visitors or others that were interacting with us, then he might have covered all the bases. I do know that on the two times when I've had the opportunity to discuss UFOs with Spielberg, first of all, he's hardly going to say, Bryce, let me tell you about the briefing I had, at a deep underground cave or anything. So I couldn't say that I would have known that even if it had happened. But I found that the discussion coming from him seemed to be the discussion I've had with many of other people who have done some serious study of ufology. Very informed, but not informed in an insider, I've just been told the secret way, but informed in a way where he's done a lot of reading, a lot of thinking, and a lot of people who have been involved in the business have given him their thoughts. And I think he's probably one of the best informed people on the planet on the topic. Among them, Rich and I also believe that even though after disclosure, he'll probably want to make a movie, he'll probably want to make his ultimate statement about the whole phenomenon after disclosure. In the immediate aftermath of disclosure, he's going to be on TV a lot. He'll be our Walter Cronkite, if you will. He'll be the avuncular uncle who is able to go on TV and help us get through this together.
Well, I think in terms of, you know, why would they want to come here, I think I figured it out. I think all of the extraterrestrials that are coming here are actually doing their graduate work. They're doing their doctoral work in abnormal psychology.
Well, they might.
And we are. We are just, you know, they have to go do observation at a clinic, and here we are.
You know, that's certainly possible, and again, if there's multiple types of others, as the evidence seems to suggest, then some of them may feel that way. But I still feel strongly that there is something unique and interesting about mankind. And one of the things that we're going to learn from disclosure is what that is. Whether we learn it on the day of disclosure, probably not. But as we kick the door open and let a little light in, and people, everybody on the planet starts speculating and talking and sharing information, we are eventually going to find out why we are so damn interesting to visitors. And that will be a revelation in and of itself.
Yeah, and of course I said what I said tongue-in-cheek. You know, I think there's every possibility that one of the reasons that we're so interesting is because we are them. You know, and I don't mean that we got on a spaceship and were transported here and that we were a colony and grew into what we are today. That's not what I'm talking about. I think there's a lot of evidence that humans, what we call humans, us, exist in civilizations throughout the galaxy and perhaps the universe, many civilizations of us. Why? I'm not sure, but I think there's pretty good evidence for that. And it could just be the kind of curiosity that we have. You know, look at the curiosity, Bryce, that's been created over this planet that they found that's habitable.
You bet. Although another old saw that I would challenge would be, if they're bright enough to get here, they must by definition be good. I kind of throw in with Stephen Hawking on this one, where he was saying, he wasn't talking about UFOs, he was talking about the SETI program, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, but he was saying, I don't know that I'd necessarily go beaming out my address to everybody because you don't know who's going to come calling. Yeah, technology does not necessarily equal goodness. If mm-hmm. it did, then the Nazis would have been a very good group because they had pretty good technology for their time.
Well, look, if technology equals goodness, why would we be at war today?
Well, of course. So technology does not necessarily... You can have technology and still have some moral issues. The one thing I also think they're going to realize about mankind is it may be that some of our visitors are a little more monochromatic than mankind. Mankind has huge diversity. We have the obvious diversity of race and culture, etc. But some of us respond to the higher angels, if you will, and we kick out our own shares of Gandhis and Mother Teresa's and people that are important people that devote their lives to good works, and we kick out a few Hitlers and Pol Pots from time to time. And I think one of the things that these others, if they have studied this at all, will realize is that we are a mixed bag.
I think that's exactly what they will probably already have determined, that we are a mixed bag. We'll be back right after this, folks, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Bryce Zabel. Bryce has a very illustrious career in television. He's a former PBS investigative reporter, CNN correspondent. He's a screenwriter and has been very, very active as a screenwriter in a lot of the things that our audience would be interested in watching and have watched. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. That's in the USA and Canada. Outside of the USA, outside of Canada, we have the flash message option available to you. And you simply go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you'll see the picture, the graphic about tonight's show. And to the right of that, there's a link that says flash message. So if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, but you want to participate in tonight's show, that's the way to do it. Or you can call us on our main number, 623-444-5889. It works anywhere on planet Earth. Bryce, we've got a flash message here from Ross in the United Kingdom. And he says, as much as I would like it to happen, I can't see disclosure actually happening. Big oil, the church, the top levels of government, and the black ops cabal have too much to lose. I wonder if they'll try and water it down so that we don't get to know about all the free energy, technology, and human genetic history, etc. How would you respond to that? Well, apparently, we don't have Bryce with us. Let me check and see. Bryce, can you hear me? Okay. Bryce is not with us, so we'll get him back on the line here. I don't know what happened. I talked with him during the break, and he was here, so we'll be right back. We are back, and I think we've got Bryce with us. Bryce, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right. We have this flash message from Ross in the United Kingdom. He says, as much as I would like to see it happen, I can't see disclosure actually happening. Big oil, the church, the top levels of government, and the black ops cabal have too much to lose. I wonder if they'll try and water it down so that we don't get to know about all the free energy technology and human genetic history. So how would you respond to that?
Well, I think that the first instinct from anyone who is disclosing anything semi-unwillingly is that they will try to water it down. But disclosure is a little bit about like pregnancy. You can't be a little bit pregnant. What you can disclose a little bit at the beginning, but once you've opened up the door, the truth is going to come spilling out in bits and pieces, maybe, but it will eventually come spilling out. I take the person's point, however, that this is not something where, and you said it earlier, by the way, Kevin, this is not something where people are sitting around in a hotel room right now getting the press release ready on disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
What Rich and I think it's going to take is some combination of events, and these events will have to be major events. The number one event that and people could argue, well, we've already had that, but we're talking about just a highly covered mass sighting that is probably a great instigator to start what we call the avalanche rolling downhill. In other words, it may be a mass sighting, but it may lead to more people talking about what they know and coming forward. You know, we could have a deathbed confession from a perhaps an ex-president or something like that. Things will happen, but beyond that, I would just ask your listener to think about one thing. We are rapidly through our increasing technology in this world, and we all know about it. We all know. I mean, look, 100 years ago, we were still pretty much horse and buggy. We had cars, but we had as many horses running around. We've made tremendous strides. We are moving forward so fast now on our own ability to detect and be aware of our surroundings in the world and reality and the universe and the dimensions, etc., that the day is coming where if the others don't disclose themselves to us, if our own representatives don't disclose what they know to us, that we will create our own disclosure, which you could argue, and I think you did earlier in the show, we're already starting to do for ourselves. But I'm talking about definitively that our own abilities to detect our environment are on an exponential roll right now. And can you imagine us being unable to detect and tell ourselves the truth about these others in, say, 20 years or 50 years? I mean, eventually, this is going to happen. I happen to think it'll be a little sooner, but eventually it will happen. It has to. We're just on that path.
All right. Now, and I agree with that. Now, let me throw a couple of things out. The first one is this. What about the notion that there are lots of extraterrestrials out there they're not reptilians, they're not the praying mantis type, they're very human looking because they are human, they're just like us, but they're from out there. Now, we've been programmed by entertainment to think that they don't look like us. And it's okay. Look, the original version of the day the Earth stood still, he looked like us.
That's
he just
right.
looked human. Well, even in the in the remake, he looks like us.
You were just saying the entertainment industry has programmed us, but if you take a look at the new NBC series that's out, The Event, they do look like us.
Yeah.
The reason they look like us in The Event, I'm pretty sure, is just because it's easier to cast actors that way, but. That's my own cynicism.
Okay, so one of the stupidest questions that I ever hear asked, well, the stupidest question is, do you believe in UFOs? And my response to that is, well, do you believe in doorknobs? I mean, there's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't. Okay,
well,
but...
All you have to believe in a UFO is that there are flying objects from time to time that we can't identify.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
Basically, you'd have to be pretty brain dead not to believe in UFOs.
But the second dumbest question that I ever hear, or dumbest statement that I ever hear, well, if they're for real, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? As if the White House actually matters to them. But let's say they did it.
That is the most ridiculous comment that I can even imagine. First of all, any intelligence that is not like our intelligence will have its own agenda. It will have its own way of thinking of things. And in fact, they may even have something that's the equivalent of the Star Trek Prime Directive. Maybe they're just here to observe and they're not here to mix in. Maybe that's not... You know what? Here's how I would put it. That's just probably not how they roll.
Yeah, there you go.
They do it differently, and they're not going to land on the White House lawn, because the truth is, we know they've been around for 60-plus years, and they haven't landed on the White House lawn, so let's stop thinking that's what they're going to do. They're not going to do that. Something else they're probably not going to do is hover massive motherships over every city in the world like they did in Independence Day, or else they probably would have done that. The way they are responding shows a different approach. That's all we can say. It is a different approach than what science fiction would like us to believe.
Okay, but let's say that one of them lands on the White House lawn for real.
Okay.
The door opens, and out steps someone that looks human. You know, the public opinion would be, this is some kind of Hollywood stunt.
Yes, it would.
You would never convince people that's real unless he comes out of there looking like Darth Vader, or he comes out of there looking like a reptilian. People just won't believe it.
Well, I guess I would, first of all, let's just stipulate, they're not landing on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
But let's say that they landed someplace where people observed them and the inhabitant of said craft looked human, more or less. I think people could wrap their head around that if it was presented in a context where we had definitive proof that the vehicle that took them was not one of ours, and it would depend. I mean, the the whole issue here that Rich and I have tried not to get too deeply sucked into is some of those details, instead to focus on, you know, what's on the other side of understanding that they're real, whether they look like humans or whether they don't, or whether some do and others don't. What's on the other side of that realization? And it isn't just a realization, by the way, that that you and I might have, or your listeners might have, but a realization that finally and fully is shared with the entire world. That's the one that's going to be the game changer, where we all, you know, you may go to Starbucks for a cup of coffee every morning, but I guarantee you, once disclosure happens, you're going to be going to Starbucks and you're going to be talking about this for a long, long time.
What do you think will be the precipitating event? Now, I know you said you don't like to make specific predictions, but I mean, what could you envision as a precipitating event that would start the avalanche? You've touched on it, but kind of describe that for us.
Sure. We actually put them on a scale. We tried to rate what we thought were the least credible to the most likely, and we even submitted it to our readers on our afterdisclosure.com blog to see what they thought. Everyone thought the least likely thing to precipitate disclosure would be photographic evidence. That came in dead last, because we all know now that photographs can be faked and have been, and that came in dead last. In the order, as we move forward, there wasn't much confidence in investigative journalism either, unless it was coupled with a whistleblower or a leak of some kind. Again, that's where these things begin to interact. No journalist seems like he's about to do this on his own, but if there's a whistleblower that contacts the New York Times, who knows? A public statement or a deathbed confession struck us as something that could move the game forward. For example, if this is just an example, but if Colin Powell in his deathbed were to say something about it, that would get some attention. Physical evidence, finding one of those pieces of the Roswell crash that's been kept on a farm or buried in a coffee tin all these years, that would help. A global declassification, and not just what we've seen lately, but where another country literally steps forward, say it was China even, that comes forward and says, these things are real. Well, that's going to kind of force us to it's going to change the discussion. And then, you know, the mass sighting. So that's kind of the run-up of things, and we think that the avalanche, as we describe it, that will lead to disclosure is going to include the interplay of several of those events all at once. By the way, the other possible disclosure that we never talk about is that the others finally disclose themselves. Now, they so far haven't shown any desire to do that in an extremely public way, but they could. It could be part of the plan, and, you know, one of these days they may just do it.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're here, so if they're here, maybe they will. I wouldn't bet on that, though. I bet on us disclosing them to ourselves.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Bryce Zabel this evening, and we're talking about this new book that he and Rich Dolan have authored. It is called AD, After Disclosure. So let me just check and see. Bryce, did you make it through the break?
I did. I'm here.
Okay. We have a flash message.
By the way, I just wanted to point out to your listeners, there's a subtitle to the book that I hope they'll latch on to, which is, it's AD, After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After Contact. We've written it, if you will, trying to make it very friendly to the reader. It's meant to be bringing everybody into the discussion. So in other words, what we're doing tonight, I hope this continues on this show and other shows where people start to lean forward into this story and continue these discussions, because it's really the people's problem, not just any one person's.
Well, and I think that's an excellent approach for the book. I really do. I don't know of any other book that has come out that deals with this topic or that would have dealt with it from that perspective, and I think it's a great work. I've got a flash message from Dana. It's either Dana or Dana in Australia. And I'll say Dana. That's the way we would say it where I am sitting. And Dana wants to know, there are rumors that there are extraterrestrials that look like us that actually are in charge of government agencies and, in some cases, top positions in government. If the disclosure shows this to be true, what would the impact be?
That would be revolutionary. The disclosure in general is a revolutionary act, but to think that human-like or indistinguishable from human-like others were actually in leadership positions would be mind-boggling and would rattle a lot of cages. And by the way, when I said earlier there's disclosure and there's disclosure, let's say that what Dana is speculating was the truth. I haven't seen the hard evidence on that. I think it's speculation. You know, there's people that have made that case and some that have, you know, not bought that case. So, but let's say that it was true. Let's just stipulate that for the moment. Even if forced into disclosure by a mass sighting, it's quite unlikely that the first act of disclosure would be to disclose that truth.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a limited disclosure. We go into the types of disclosure one could have. There's radical and revolutionary disclosure where you just say, if we just dump it all out there all at once, it'll have less impact because it'll be too much and people won't be able to get outraged over the dribs and drabs. So there's that. Then there's limited disclosure, which is what I think, no matter what they do, it's going to be limited at the beginning as they sort of stall for time to try to figure out how to let the rest of the pieces go. But Dana's absolutely right. I mean, that's outrageous. That would have people... that would be world-changing. And if that is the truth, the secret keepers, the breakaway group, are going to be loath to disclose that in the first round. That much I'm pretty sure of.
Well, I would find it difficult at this point to buy into that theory. Although I'm open-minded about it, and I have to say anything is possible. I'm very reluctant to buy into it because I haven't seen evidence of it.
Neither have I. So I put it in the, you know, my friend Stan Friedman has the gray basket.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's definitive gray basket material at this point.
Well, for me, it would be very dark gray.
Yeah, well, very. I mean, yeah I agree with you. I mean, that's why I say it would be even more, it would be a revolutionary act inside a revolutionary act if that was the case. I think the truth, in whatever incarnation it presents itself, will be shocking enough for most people. But the idea that there are those who can walk literally among us, the fact that there might be human-like entities involved in our surveillance doesn't mean that they're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, you'd have to bifurcate that and say there's no evidence necessarily of them being in charge.
I have had guests on this show, among them Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean and others, who have talked about this and have said to us that we can bet our boots that the intelligence guys, this is something that they're really, really nervous about, is these would be these human looking aliens because of their ability to infiltrate.
Absolutely.
And there is a story that's out there of one that was discovered, and I forget who was I think Richard Nixon was the president. But anyway, it's just a story, and I'm not saying by any means that there's any credence to the story, but it's interesting. That was found in a lower level position, I believe it was in the State Department, and the story simply says that he was rounded up, he was interrogated for about 2 months, and then was allowed to leave the planet. Now, I think that makes a great plot for a sci-fi show.
Yeah, you know what, though? In a sci-fi show, we wouldn't let him leave the planet. one of the things that Rich and I tried to do is not to get sucked into having to prove the details of certain things. Our take on this book is the preponderance of evidence is definitive that we are being visited. On that, we can agree. Mm-hmm. The specifics about that story, for example, no book the size of our book could take on the burden of having to prove or disprove or even take a position on that and still try to look ahead to the future of the planet after disclosure. But what we do try to do is say, if such a thing were true, what would be the impact in a post-disclosure world? And one thing I can tell you right now is if part of disclosure includes the notion that there are others who look human, well, imagine what that will do on a family by family, friend by friend, community by community basis. You will start to look at everybody with suspicion as they will look at you. And that will not be good. That may usher in, if that part of the equation is true, now you're looking at the potential for a kind of a McCarthyism in the future.
Well, and think of the social impact once there is... If there are these others that look just like us and are genetically matched with us, right. Imagine the social impact this will have years and decades into the future when there is assimilation of them with us. And your daughter comes in and she says, this is Zendor from Glomgaff,
right.
And, we're getting married. I'm moving to Glomgaff.
It's possible. And as you said... anything is possible. I think where I come at this is, I don't know about that. I've seen and heard the stories. I've done as much reading as I can to try to determine how I might feel about that. What I'm more prone to believe is that they don't look like us. But that's just my own personal opinion right now. And I do think, though, by the way, I do believe there's more than one type of others. The reason we use the plural of the others, and we don't call them visitors because that sounds like V, and we don't call them ETs because we don't know they're extraterrestrial. We call them others for the simple reason that we do know they're not from here, therefore they're others. And we think that the evidence is reasonably strong that there are multiple varieties of these others. And so... maybe among that variety there's one that is human-like, but the rest of them aren't. So we still have to deal with that issue.
Okay, Bryce, I want to thank you for being with us. If you will, stay on the phone with me for just a moment as we bring the show in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.